on the ground, snow white so bright. In the fireplace is the Yule log. Beneath the mistletoe as we drink eggnog. The rhymes that you hear are the rhymes of carols. Like each and every year we bust Christmas carols. Christmas carols.
Fewer companies are throwing office Christmas parties these days, but if you still crave that unbridled mayhem, you can find it in a new film called Office Christmas Party without even having to deal with annoying coworkers, a hangover, or all those morning after regrets. It's the latest feature from co-directors Will Speck and Josh Gordon, whose previous films are Blades of Glory and The Switch. It has an all-star cast that includes Jason Bateman, Jennifer Aniston, Olivia Munn, Vanessa Bayer, Kate McKinnon, Courtney B. Vance, and T.J. Miller. It opens wide this Friday, and I'm very pleased to welcome its two directors to our show today. Hello.
Hey.
How's it going?
Bloomberg News reports that Christmas office parties have gone from 83% in 1998 to 65% last year. What do you think has led to their decline? The messiness of the drunken carousing, or all those things that were better left unsaid?
You know, I think it's kind of a combination of things. I think corporate America has valued their workers less and less as we go. And I think the little perks, the things that they used to kind of allow and pay for, have sort of gone the way of other budget cuts like overtime and healthcare. But I also think that social media really put a dent in it. I think people getting recorded at their Christmas events and passed around, I think it ended enough careers that people started to shy away from it.
It's sort of the era of HR and liability, where I think there was a time where that didn't exist as much, and we're trying to sort of bring that back.
Although you do deal with that in this film.
Yeah.
initially in the film, there's not going to even be this kind of office party at all at Zenitech, where the film takes place. What sets it in motion?
What's that one?
What changes their mind and
allows
them to have the
what
party?
Shifts it? Well, they're a struggling branch. They're the Midwest branch of a large corporation. And Jennifer Aniston's character runs the New York branch, and her brother runs this, you know, Chicago branch. And what changes their mind is that she's basically trying to close the branch. And the only thing they can do to save themselves is to land a client who's worth a big piece of their business. And the thing that they come up with is that they're going to throw a great Christmas party because they've got one day to scramble to get this guy's business and in turn hopefully saving themselves.
Had you been looking for a while for what to follow your last film, The Switch, with, did you always know that it was going to be another comedy?
We did. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, we have a large appetite for making different kinds of movies, but I think what we do unify our sensibility on is that we always can find the humor in something. And I think we wanted to find something that was a very universal subject that everybody either has firsthand experience with or knows somebody that's gone to an office Christmas party, that it wasn't a comedy based on a contrivance. And I think that was what was appealing to us.
And people will recognize a lot of the stuff here. That was an important part. On the other hand, the night does get kind of wild. Someone literally does swing from the ceiling on a string of Christmas lights.
That doesn't happen.
Your intention was to show people at the most dysfunctional?
I think so. I mean, I think for Will and I, you know, we did work in some offices over the years. But I think we never got to go to a lot of the big Christmas parties or holiday parties. And I think for us, this was an opportunity to throw the one that we wish we had gone to. And now we feel like we've experienced
it. We're also hoping that we subtly suggest some new traditions that can be adopted, like right. The cocaine snow machine.
Oh, I thought that this was based on the Geico Christmas party.
We weren't invited to that.
The movie is based, as we said, on people who will remind the audience of folks they're familiar with.
Yeah. The
part of the branch president, Clay, is of vital importance because if you don't believe him or in him, the whole thing falls apart. Where did you find T.J. Miller? He's,
you know,
the least famous member. She's the least famous member of the cast.
Yeah, you know, hopefully this movie changes that because he deserves to be right up there with the rest of them. T.J. was somebody actually who came to us through our advertising work. We did a Motorola campaign where he played a very lazy version of a smartphone that wasn't doing what the people wanted them to do. And when we were on set with him, he was so inventive and so smart. And we sort of had him up our sleeve always as the lead and the boss that you really wish you had. And I think what happened was because of Silicon Valley.
His career kind of caught up to our ambition for him, which is great.
And he was so great in Deadpool, and I think it was just enough momentum behind him to have Spielberg and the studio say, you know what, let's take a chance on this guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you didn't have to take a chance on some of the other people in the film. His sister, played by Jennifer Aniston, kind of ruthless CEO of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't Jason Bateman star with Jennifer Aniston in your last film, The Switch?
He did, yeah.
I mean, the good news is we had their cell phone numbers.
Right, so we could bully them into it.
Exactly.
I think we had such a good time working with them on The Switch, and we knew we wanted to find something to do with them again, but we wanted to give them kind of the opportunity to explore different versions of what they're capable of. And so Jen, you know, who is an incredibly nice person in real life, for some reason has this great skill at tapping into ruthless cruelty. And Jason, to us, you know, we bonded over a lot of the same movies, and we love The Apartment, which is the Billy Wilder movie. And to us, you know, Bateman really is sort of a Jack Lemmon for this time. He's a great reactor. He's great at sort of holding the center of a movie.
And then from Saturday Night Live, you have a woman who's become a major star. She can play pretty much anything.
Yeah.
Kate McKinnon, who plays Mary here, the very by-the-rules head of human resources. But now that we've seen her as both Hillary Clinton and Kellyanne Conway, I'm convinced she can play anybody.
Well, she definitely plays both sides of the political fence very well. You know, we had always loved Kate, and I think what she does that's very unique, and, you know, our first movie had Will Ferrell in it, and he did a similar thing, is, you know, she's not just a sketch performer. All of those characters she plays, they always have a full emotional life and idiosyncratic versions of those kind of tropes. And I think for our HR director, we felt like if anybody can subvert the rules, it's Kate McKinnon.
And you decided to write backstories in your mind for all of these
people? We did. I mean, for us, it was very important to kind of have everybody. We wanted to make a large ensemble movie, but we didn't want people to just be extras or to have incomplete stories. And to us, that's the thing about the Christmas party, the holiday party. You know, it's a moment for anybody to kind of have their breakthrough. And so we really worked very hard, even though some of them are only one or two scene arcs, to have everybody kind of arc in a way.
You also, from Saturday Night Live, have Vanessa Bayer.
Yeah.
But it's hard to think of Courtney B. Vance of The People versus O.J. Simpson as being in a situation like this. How did you think about casting him as Walter Davis, the client that they need to convince to stay with them?
I think giving that role a little bit of a spirit of enigma was important to us. I think we wanted the audience, like the characters in the movie, to not know if they could sway this guy. And I think, you haven't seen him in the comedy space. We saw him on Broadway, actually, in Six Degrees of Separation when we were in college together at NYU, mm-hmm. and just have always loved his dramatic work. OJ, that blew us away as Cochrane. I think having him have that gravitas and weight really helped propel the movie, because you just don't know where he's going to go.
How much did you go into the various characters' backstories with the actors?
Pretty extensively.
Quite a lot. Yeah. I mean, we also sat with the actors when we cast them and brought them into the writing process a little bit, you know.
Because you have all of these comic actors.
And they're
so
additive.
I'm assuming they wanted to improvise.
Yeah, there were 18 of them.
You want to kind of make them your partners in this, so that when they are improvising, they're in your headspace and they're giving you stuff that you can use. And that was great. It was a great process.
My guests are Will Speck and Josh Gordon, whose latest film is Office Christmas Party, and it opens wide, as they say, this coming Friday, so I can't go through all the names of all the theaters. You had Kate McKinnon sing a German song.
That was her idea. Yeah. I think, you know, everybody has their moment with Courtney B. Vance's character, Walter, the client that they're trying to woo, and I think some of those, as all awkward Christmas party moments can be, didn't go as well as others. And Kate's idea was that she was of German descent and had a great Christmas carol that she could slowly and quietly sing to him.
When you have a cast that's this heavy with comic actors and comedians, does it require two people to direct?
You know,
keep things under control.
Yes, is the short answer.
I think any party is better with two hosts than one.
Yeah. Will and I have worked together since NYU, and the advantage for us is that we share the same sensibility and we have a very smooth working relationship. But it allows you to not get overwhelmed. It allows you to kind of focus on all the things that are important as directors and not be, you know, not be stretched too thin, I think.
You shot it in Chicago, really in winter?
Yeah. Well, actually, it was in spring. And what we got really lucky on is normally in films, especially with the world right now, there's not as much snow as there used to be, sadly. And I think, you know, we knew that we were going to add some CG snow. And especially in the first act, the third act, there was a snowstorm. And we were sort of told by the studio in no uncertain terms that that was going to be very expensive. And it just so happened, luckily enough, that first day in April that we shot, it snowed, so it was a little bit of a sign.
And then, crazy enough, we went indoors the next day. It didn't snow. And then we went outdoors the third day, and it snowed again.
So when it snowed in April,
God wanted this movie to work.
The movie gods wanted this to
happen. Exactly. Somebody was on our side.
But you also had to direct reindeer.
Not a fun animal.
No.
Especially in the springtime.
Could you just put horns onto a dog? And
We pretty much did.
Yeah, we had to fashion lightweight horns to put on their head because they lose their horns, and then they lose their coats. They become really disgusting animals.
Yeah, exactly. April and reindeer do not go
in
together.
In Atlanta.
Exactly.
It's not a good combination.
The movie also is very fast-paced. There's a lot of chaos going on. Is that something that only happens in the editing room?
I think we wanted it to feel like just when you thought you could sort of settle into one character story that you could subvert the expected and go to another one. So I think, you know, we shot a lot, but as you say, you know, in the editing room, we really paced it up because I think we wanted to keep people feeling like, as a moviegoer, you were at that party. And the way that you experience a party is you get your drink and you go from one side of the room to the other. And I think that was the emotion we wanted to carry when you were actually experiencing
it. I like that you just paced up your answer as you were talking.
You said that you've known each other since film school. Did you go into advertising first?
We did. I mean, we actually, when we graduated from film school, we worked on short films together.
Which is what most film students
exactly.
do.
Exactly. It was what we could afford to achieve at that point, and also, I think, emotionally, what we could kind of control. And one of them was nominated for an Oscar, and that got us sort of our first agent and got us signed at Ridley and Tony Scott's commercial company, RSA.
Where we got to do short films for advertising.
Right.
People.
It was a great learning experience.
Yeah.
Probably best known for the caveman and Gecko commercials for Geico.
Yeah. Sure.
How far along before did you come up with them?
Or we pretty much invented them with that ad agency. I think, you know, they had done a very early version of a Gecko that sort of wasn't taking on, and then they asked us to come on and design it with them. And we actually saw a theater actor in London in a play that we loved who we thought could be the voice, and that took some convincing, but they went with it. And
with the caveman, it was a great copywriter there named Joe Lawson who ultimately went on to great success in TV, and with him we kind of crafted that first campaign.
And we invented the idea that they were really gentrified and in our society. Originally, it was written that they were just in pelts holding clubs, and I think
we thought metrosexual caveman was a very funny.
It was time.
A lot of people have gone from doing commercials and music videos into feature films, but you go back and forth.
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, thankfully, we're at a stage in the advertising space where we do selective work that doesn't involve people holding up toothpaste and staring at the camera talking about plaque.
There's a great kind of artistry to commercials at a certain level, and they've been both a great learning experience as directors, but also we've been able to get our sensibility out there, which is kind of a great, you
but
know.
I also assume that because of the success of the ones you've done, people are more likely to sign you to do certain kinds of commercials, like the Apple commercial with Bill Hader.
There's sort of, you know, we get sent things that are always comedic but that have a little bit of a subversive edge to them and some visual landscape. So
I'm going to ask you the question that seems to apply to pretty much every guest. In this new political era,
yes.
Uh-oh.
Do you think the tone and direction of comedies will change?
Do you think
if you make fun of Donald Trump, that he'll tweet about it sometime in the middle of
which
the
day? Which could help your movie.
That's become the new publicity.
I think people need comedy more now than they've ever needed.
There's something that it's a great equalizer, and I think always traditionally, you know, when times are tough, I think people need escape, and you know, the movies have always sort of spiked in harder times in our country, and I think, you know, it's a rough time for everybody, and I think something that gets people gathered into a communal space and has something where they can all laugh at the same moment is important.
Well, some of our greatest comedies were made during the Great Depression. I hope we're not going to have to go through something like that again.
I know.
Yeah. My thanks to both of you so much for being on
our
show.
Thank you so much for having us. We're big fans and love WNYC.
Will Speck, Josh Gordon, their film Office Christmas Party opens wide this Friday.
Go see it.